And we are thrilled to, on the Jump Around, welcome in Matt LePay. And Matt, thanks for taking the time to join us. And it's a busy time of year, you know, mid-June, and so much is going on in sports. So, I mean, how do you spend this time of year? That's my main question for you.
Well, when Riley reached out, I thought, sure, I got an opening in my schedule here. I don't have a game for another 2.5 months. You know, it's a lot of charity events, which I know you guys, you'll do as well. Some other like administrative broadcast stuff with our Learfield folks, and not gonna lie, a little time at the cabin up north. Yeah. Be heading up there in a few days, but it seems like there's enough to stay fairly busy. You're just not preparing for a game quite yet.
Okay, what is Matt LePay's favorite summer activity? You're up at the cabin. Are you a big fisherman? Do you golf a lot? What's your go-to?
I've gotten to the point where golf brings anxiety. Okay. Because I'm so bad. I don't know. Are you guys golfers?
In name only.
Okay,
yeah.
So when you're,
I'll get out a few times.
Like
a year.
When you're in these charity events, you're with people you may or may not know, and especially if you don't know them. Like, you try to tell them, like, no, I'm not good. And right. Usually that's a sandbag type of approach.
Yeah.
With me, it's not. It's honest. So it's like, just let me hit the ball in the air fairly straight now and then, and I'm good with that. Favorite activity, though, in our little cottage we have up north, I'll eat the fish. I'm not very good at catching them.
Okay.
So you don't want to spill your drink on the pontoon. Like, if it gets a little wavy out there. So just kind of be in that lazy floating living room type of thing. That's part of a perfect day for me when you're out on the boat.
That sounds like, that sounds fun.
Yeah, it's a good way to nice kind of reset and get away. But so this time of year, though, obviously in our line of work, we're talking heads. We got to talk all the time. But for you, how much do you kind of just consume sports, even if it's on the background, whether it's the Brewers or the Bucks news, but even just things about the Badgers being written, just to kind of stay in the loop so you kind of have that info, even if you never use it?
Yeah, with me this time of year, a lot of it is more big picture. We got the craziness of the college landscape these days, and now the 5 years to play 5 seasons of college football, basketball, college athletics. You try to keep up to date with that as much as you can. Starting to collect some of the publications, you know, not so much on the Badgers, but on Notre Dame and, you know, the Big Ten teams that these guys are going to face. You start to get that going a little bit. It's you want to escape to a certain extent, but now with rosters that change so much, including this one, like I'll start prepping Wisconsin stuff, you know, these days earlier than I would have back when Barry was coaching, or Brett, or even, you know, most of Paul's years, because you have a pretty good idea who's back. You know, Riley, you know, we were at spring practices, but I'm still trying to, who's this guy? Who's this guy? Because the roster has changed over so much. I'll put together probably a mock spotting board, which normally I don't do that in the middle of summer, but I'm getting to that point, like, I probably better. Let me just make sure I've got everybody's background squared away. And it's kind of nerdy in the weeds stuff I'm giving you here. But you want to stay up with it. You want to escape, but you also want to stay up with stuff reasonably well during the summer so you're not hit between the eyes come August 5th, August 6th when camp gets going.
Well, some of that has to be because, like, I mean, the fun part about this is that we're all lucky. And so it never really feels like work. It's kind of your passion for it. And you can hear that in the broadcast, but is that kind of like your marker for calling things and doing things? Is like, I'm always excited, so I want to keep on doing this because in the summer I do want to create a board and be ready to go.
Yeah, it is. I mean, as much as the college world has changed, you know, game day is still game day. You know, the band's going to play, the Bucky Wagon's going to come out, we're going to jump around, we're going to do all those cheers that Riley led, you know, back in the day. Basketball, the same thing. I know in basketball, a lot of people don't pay attention until March, but there's a lot of fun stuff that happens in December, November through February. And, you know, it's still Big Ten basketball. You get a big game, preferably on a Saturday afternoon at 1 o'clock, but every night, every day is in play. But you get a Michigan State rolling in here or in Illinois, there's still a big game atmosphere to it. When the Pac-10 schools or Pac-12, Pac-whatever, when they joined the league a couple of years ago, even like their broadcasters were saying, man, like every game in the Big Ten is kind of a big deal. Where, you know, maybe an Arizona State Stanford game didn't have a lot of juice on a December night in February, or a night game in February, a Wednesday night in February. In the Big Ten, in a lot of ways, it does. Not every arena, but a lot of them do. So that part is still fun for me. So as I tell fans, like with football, you don't have to worry too much about Sunday through Friday, but Saturday's fun. Let Saturday be Saturday, and that's still important.
Last broadcasting-related question for me, but you mentioned the changing landscape of college athletics. For you as a broadcaster, you've been at this for a little while now. How much has it changed for you, whether it be your weekly prep during the season, your daily prep, or the summer off-season? Like, how much has broadcasting changed
for you? In some ways, it's changed for the better for me. It's easier because you have better access to video preparation mm-hmm. of an opponent. Now, first games are first games. The good news and the bad news is Notre Dame has a lot of guys back from last year. That's kind of the good news for prep. I don't know if it's good news otherwise because they're probably going to be pretty good. Mm-hmm. But once you get into the season, you can easily access video mm-hmm. of the opponents, whether it's through ESPN Plus, BTN Plus, whatever it is, or any other kind of maybe specific coaching video if you're that deep into it. I know Tausch likes to do that when he can. It's now a lot of programs don't put out two deeps anymore, which they should be told to do that, but they don't. But there's still ways to access that. I've been really lucky here to have coaches, including Luke Fickell now, who will, like Tausch and I, will view practices. Mm-hmm. And not many people are allowed to do that. Now, we're not, obviously, something happens in a practice, we're not reporting that. It's just a way for us to get some background, get an idea of what they're doing. So in that regard, it's not that much different. Our booth locations in the Big Ten are still really good, but it's not always the case in the NFL. You talk to NFL radio guys, they'll tell you mm-hmm. that. But it's not bad. I mean, we're able to talk to players during the course of the week. So that hasn't been a dramatic change in that regard. If anything, it's been a change for the better.
Okay, I lied. Quick follow-up on that.
Yeah, you broke the one rule. Don't say last broadcasting question.
It might be the last question, but.
As you guys can tell, I'm still on the younger side. still figuring it out. So I lied. Follow up on that. You mentioned you're able to watch practices, and I remember listening on the radio. I believe we were driving to our post game location when Sean West pulled off the fake punt. I believe it was against Illinois, where he threw it to Jackson Aker, if I remember correct. I just remember you went nuts and you said, we've seen them been working on that. How mm-hmm. cool is it when you see them work on a trick play or something in practice, then you get to see it come to fruition in the game?
Yeah, a lot of times they work on stuff all year and never use it. Mm-hmm. So there was the one against Ohio State, which was probably a little crazy on his part, but it worked out. But yeah, it is. Brett was really big into trick plays. So the same thing with him when they would run some stuff that, oh, look at this. You know, well, we've seen this a little bit in practice over the last few weeks. It is kind of fun, but you do have to, as a broadcaster, you have to hold it, obviously, mm-hmm. until it happens. And then you say, okay, yeah, this is something that they've been eyeing up for the last X number of weeks. And to see it come to fruition, because it doesn't always work, that part, it's good. So it also takes a little bit of the element of surprise out of it. When they ran the Nolan Rucci pass play against Illinois, that was something that they had worked on some and then they didn't. So when it actually happened, it was like, that is Nolan Rucci, right? Yeah. So there was a number but no name. There was a little bit of a hesitation there. But, yeah, it's kind of fun when you see that happen. Brett was really big into it, and as we have seen with Fickell, they'll pull out a trick from time to time as well.
You can tell over time that the players obviously appreciate you on the broadcast and being a part of that, and players talk about that a lot. How much is it like enjoyment for you to be able to see some of these guys when they go? I mean, Nick Boyd might get drafted tonight. There's other guys that go in the NFL and different things. Like, how exciting for you is it to see them, and do you follow their careers after they leave Wisconsin?
It's one of the more fun parts of this, Jim. I remember Mike Chernilia, Jada's father, when Mike was with the W Club years ago, we were at an event. I don't even remember specifically what the event was, some kind of a dinner. It might have been a basketball steak fry thing. He said, what's the coolest part of your job? And it's easy to say, well, when Sam Decker hit the step back three against Kentucky, or you mentioned moments, but it's seeing players who you got to know a little bit. Now, Nick Boyd was here 1 year, but seems like a great dude, always upbeat. But guys who have been here for 3, 4, 5 years, and then to watch them go on to the league, and then when they come back, you're able to have conversations, and that's the fun part of that. And now, kind of, you're asking Riley about the broadcast. You know, has there been changes with the landscape? Not so much there, or what has changed has been for the better. On the other side, you're probably going to get fewer of those kind of players who were here for, you know, wire to wire, and then watch them go into the league. But still, you know, to see a John Tanjay get an opportunity, hopefully, you know, Nick Boyd will get a really good opportunity. Yep. That is, and, you know, Sam Decker and Devin Harris, saw him a couple days ago in an event. Guys like that, it's always fun to kind of track their career and all those Badger football players through the course of time who have carved out, drafted or not, who have carved out very good NFL careers.
Luke Fickell talked a little about this, as far as, like, college football has changed a little bit, maybe how you're getting the players, but in that locker room it's the same. But he kind of made a joke at the end, made me think about basketball as well. But he's like, well, maybe the guys are a little bit older. And I do find that dynamic interesting of someone, I think, it may have been Tanjay himself, talking about how he'd open up the, you know, not actually, but like open up the newspaper and have a cup of coffee when everyone else is, you know, having, yes, you know, an energy drink or whatever. But that dynamic has to be something new and probably fun to see when you have a player who's maybe 23, 24 on the basketball team, on the football team, interacting with the 18 and 19 year olds, because it's more than just, oh, freshman and senior. It is someone who is established a little bit in life, and an 18-year-old. That's a big difference between 18 and 23.
It is, and you know, you really notice it in football, but the same can be said for basketball and probably any other sport. It's been interesting. The basketball guys are starting their summer program right now, a lot of lifting and then some time on the court, and being over there a couple of times in the last week, I'm still in my own mind getting adjusted to, okay, this team has 8 newcomers. But a lot of these they're men.
Yeah.
You know, it's not a bunch of skinny kids just getting out of high school. And what you're noticing is, even those high school kids aren't necessarily – they're built a little differently than maybe what they used to be. But you're talking about guys who are 22, 23. I think – is Owen Foxwell 23 or 24, I think? Yeah. I mean, he's not 18 years old, mm-hmm, just coming in wide-eyed. So there is – I mean, even in my own mind, with that many newcomers, it doesn't mean they're new to this level of play. So that part has been – That's been a real eye-opener for me here the past couple of years, especially.
How have you seen that specifically impact, whether it be on the field, football, on the court, basketball? It feels to me it'd probably have a bigger impact on the court in basketball, because there's just such a smaller roster, more opportunities to make an impact or sort of showcase that leadership being older. But how have you seen that increased age sort of impact the games themselves?
Well, you would hope in most cases, and I think we've seen that here at Wisconsin, these are guys who really know how to play. And it meant, you know, with Nick Boyd, for instance, I mean, Dusty May coached him at FAU, and you know, he's had very good coaching prior to his time at Wisconsin. John Tanjay is a very similar story. So they come in here with a general knowledge of what works at this level of basketball. But still, you know, they're newcomers here. So this is a really important time of year, not just for the obvious, the X's and O's on the court, but just all the other things that you're expected to do as a Wisconsin basketball player. So that's where you rely heavily on a Nolan Winter, who's a wire-to-wire guy, and then, you know, a Jack Janicki, and even – you know, the sophomores, like Will Garlock, guys like that, Hayden Jones, they've been through it, and they can help guide these, you know, if it's a Trey Autry, a Victory Onetu, got that name down yet? when he's blocking shots coming up this winter. You know, I'm sure they come in here and their head's spinning at first, but these other guys help bring them in, and okay, this is what things are done. This is what the expectations are here, and they're pretty good at following that.
Yeah, and you know, with that, as far as setting expectations and having that around, I think one of the things I heard, it was actually earlier today, was Antonio Freeman was telling his son, Alex Freeman, on the USA soccer team to ask questions of the veterans and ask, you know, ask the older guy, and be the one that annoys them. And mm-hmm. I was, you know, whether it's someone you remember or any, like, do you remember some of these young guys? I mean, Borland kind of came out of nowhere, Taylor, but were there traits that you saw in them, forget even physically, but just the way they were curious about the game, that you kind of in your head, maybe it was in pre, you know, whether it's spring practice or in June now for basketball, being like, I might just remember that name right now because they might matter a little bit later.
You're talking about transfers or anybody in particular?
Just anyone. Just popped into your head.
Cooper Catalano.
Okay.
I mean, just watching him even last fall camp in Platteville, like, ooh. And, you know, people in this state, we know that he had a zillion tackles, the all-time tackles leader in Wisconsin high school football. But, like, and even in August, I wasn't smart enough to think, ooh, this guy's going to be, like, one of the really big guys in this program, he and Mason Posa, but he always seemed to be around the ball. Like, okay. I mean, that is a for instance. And a couple of years ago, Greg Gards talked about this a lot as a transfer. John Tanjay had played a lot of basketball. But, you know, Guard has mentioned this multiple times. Like, a lot of times you can think you know everything about everything. You know, you scored 13, 14 points a game at Colorado State. You're at Missouri. You got hurt. It was a tough year there. But you're not new to college basketball. But he said a guy like him came in with questions. He didn't come in with all the answers or claiming to have all the answers. So that, I think that's an important component to this, and not just the two sports I'm around, football and men's basketball, but I think, you know, Kelly Sheffield would tell you this with volleyball and you know, Mark Johnson, Mike Hastings with hockey. Like, you have to get the skill set, but you have to have all the other components too. You have to be willing to listen, willing to learn, willing to be coached, not be a disruptor in the locker room. And I think, you know, you've really, like, basketball, everything seems more noticeable, right? But they seem like they've hit home runs in that regard. They've had pretty good dudes. I'm not saying everybody's perfect, but the chemistry has by and large been good. I know this past year with the Boyd Blackwell thing, it was a little tough for John, or maybe more than a little. But he had a lot of really big games, and Nick Boyd had a lot of really big games, and they won a ton of games. So whatever differences there might have been, they worked through that and put together a really good season.
So you mentioned Cooper Catalano. This is probably an unfair question to ask in June, but from watching spring ball and being around the team, is there anyone that you have seen that has given you that same emotion reaction that you saw from Cooper Catalano last year? I understand that was fall camp, so a little different, but is there anyone on football roster? I know you just talked about the basketball team, basketball roster too, that you've noticed.
This current team right now, I know Colton Joseph, I think it can be really, really impressive, but you talk about unfair. Here we are in June, and a true freshman. This Ryan Hopkins kid out of Newport Beach, California, you're like, okay, all right. You know, he can spin it, he can run, seems like he has a presence about him. But all three of them, you know, Deuce Adams too, you know, those top three quarterbacks, and Carter Smith is a tough dude. You know, now is the skill set, you know, with all the others, you could debate that. But the Hopkins kid was really, really impressive. I think Abu Sama, running back transfer out of Iowa State, he's someone you're like, okay, all right. They may have something there. So those are a couple, maybe two or three right there. I'm still, like, in the spring, you're trying to process it. As you know, the offensive line, they had a couple guys who missed some time. And that's going to really have to get – if they can get that solidified, that could solve a lot of other things here. But the quarterbacks, the three newer faces, you're like, okay, I think there's a pretty good skill set, and they have similar skill sets. If one has to come in for the other, I don't think they have to totally revamp the offense, which you hope is a good thing.
Mm-hmm. One of the things, like, as a broadcaster, obviously quarterback's the most important position, and you get a chance, you get access to these quarterbacks. And I remember down in Florida, down in Miami, I'd be around, I was standing on the sideline, and Kyle Wright, who was the number one recruit in the country and he was playing at Miami, and you could see him, like, fantastic in practice, just never in the game. And when you interviewed him from afar, you'd be like, I don't see, like, how is he, like, getting the guys to rally behind him? Michael Irvin stand next to me yelling and screaming. He's like, how is this guy our quarterback? And, like, was very upset on the sidelines there. So it just always reminded me that there is a it factor. So I can never necessarily nail it down, but there are certain players you talk to. You know, we can use quarterback as an example. But, like, when you're talking to someone, what is that factor? There's something there that you can kind of just pick up on where you're like, okay, well, let's see what the talent is. But they seem to have whatever it is to be successful.
Yeah, I've been fooled by that at times, because when Jack Cohn was here, you talk to him and you're thinking, okay, you know, nice kid, you know, like, all right, nothing special. But then you get him out there and the respect that he earned in that locker room, the command that he must have had in the huddle, dude was good.
Yeah.
You know, and just, was he flashy? No. Was he really good and tough? Yeah. And I would go back even, you may not have been born yet, Riley. Mike Samuel back in the 98 season especially. I mean, the old joke, he couldn't, you know, we're separated by like 6 feet, six, 7 feet. I couldn't, you know, we wouldn't complete it from me to you until the game was on the line.
Right.
And then he was like one of the more clutch quarterbacks that I've seen here in the 38 years, I guess, I've been around. And tough as nails, strong. He was one of those guys, if you sat him down as a college player here, you'd be lucky to get more than 10, 12 words in any answer. But there was a toughness about him that you had to forget about, you know, how much of a conversation you would have with him. He'd just go out. He would go out and play. So in the past, I try to be like, it's important. We're spoiled. We like guys who can really talk. Like, I love Graham Mertz because he was just a great guy to be around, and his first start here was magical. And then there were a lot of circumstances that maybe had things go sideways. And then he, you know, as you see, he went to Florida and put up some good numbers and got himself drafted, and you know, things worked out well for him. But like Kona, in the last like 7-8 years or so, he was one of those guys that he wouldn't overwhelm you in a casual conversation, but man, you if he was your quarterback, say, okay, I'm good, let's go.
Okay, you mentioned the it factor for players. Were there any, I'm sure you get asked this question a lot as a broadcaster, you mentioned you've been doing it for 38 years, but what are some of the, I don't know, maybe if they
didn't
even...
You're not supposed to mention that again.
Sorry. This is a learning... This whole interview, this is a learning experience for me, and I appreciate it. But were there maybe some individual moments where maybe if the player didn't showcase the it factor all the time, but you mentioned Mike Samuel in the clutch, where are there some moments that stick out to you where someone had a Herculean effort and maybe you didn't expect it, or... Just a big moment that sticks out to you.
That's a good question. I'll probably think of that in like 5 hours and text you.
Okay, thank you. That'll work.
As a basketball player, a guy named Rob Wilson. He was a nice player, had pretty modest statistics, and then in a Big Ten tournament game against Tom Crean's Indiana Hoosiers, he drops 30 points.
I remember that game. Yeah,
it's like. Hey, Tom, you just can't catch a break against these guys. You know, you've got them on the ropes. And then Rob Wilson, who averages single digits, just goes off on you. And, you know, the one that goes back to that, I guess we're 26 years removed, and it wasn't just one moment. It was a series of games that led to the Final Four, John Bryant. He averaged 8 points a game, I think, during the regular season. He doubled that in the four games in the West Regional. So that's part of the beauty of sports, is that that Herculean performance can come from sources you just don't know. But Jim, go back to your we talk about quarterbacks. I cannot talk Wisconsin quarterbacks without mentioning Brooks Bollinger.
Yeah, well,
because there was that's kind of the obvious. Like, do you really even need to say that?
Yeah.
But you know, I mean, Russell was tremendous. I love Scotty Tolzien, but I think Tauscher. In fact, I know Tauscher would say this. Like, if I needed a quarterback, I wanted wire to wire for 2-3 years, Brooks is my guy. I mean, he just, to this day, there is a presence about him that you cannot help but be impressed with. I mean, and he could go make the plays, not flashy, but he could beat you with his feet, and he could throw it better at the college level than people gave him credit for.
And again, not to like joke, but it's not the physical stature, it was just his overall presence that you just... He literally felt bigger than he actually was. So I think that's a great answer on that. This is the last one I have for you, and you mentioned the quarterback here. And I've always kind of heard this, and maybe this is right or wrong, but like broadcasters for like national or even for the Badgers here yourself, it's when you're calling a game, you're assuming the fans know maybe the quarterback, and the rest you kind of got to make sure you're filling in all the color in the lines for them. How much has that even changed more with the transfer portal era? I mean, it's impossible for me to keep up. Obviously, it's your job to keep up. But even someone for me where I'm always trying to keep up, halftime, I'm like, who is this guy? And I'm the one listening to the broadcast, and I'm like, I have to go like look up online who this player is. So has that kind of, I want to say changed, but are you even more aware as far as having to really fill in the details on some of these players?
That's one of the challenges, and that's where it's gotten more difficult with the changing landscape, because you want to try to introduce these newer faces as best you can, but the game moves quickly. We have a fair amount of traffic that we get in during the course of a game broadcast, and that's very, it's vital to what we do. But as we get going into the first game and during the first game against Notre Dame and game two, game three, we need to tell them who is this Abu Sama? Mm-hmm. You know, tell me about Malachi Coleman. He's been a few different places. You know, maybe this is the breakout opportunity for him at receiver after being at Minnesota the year before and at Nebraska before that. That's the challenge for us. We know Taush will take care of the offensive line. You know, they never hold. Any holding call is a bad call. We all know that. But Taush, he's great with a lot of things, but including that. But, yeah, I'm going to need to – who is this Colton Joseph? Who is Deuce Adams? Who is Ryan Hopkins? And even like Carter Smith, we know a little bit.
Yep.
But it was later in the year before he had his opportunity. So that's I think that's important for us to do that as best as we can, because the roster has turned over as much as it has.
Last one from me. You mentioned the players earlier that you've seen in practice and are excited to watch. Just in general with Wisconsin football, obviously, last season, not what we all hoped for. But why should Badgers fans still be excited heading into the fall of 2026?
Well, I think just based on what I've seen, they seem to me to have a better collection of talent. Now, I guard that by I don't know how much better their opponents are going to be. I know Notre Dame is going to be pretty good.
Yeah.
The first three Big Ten opponents are with new coaching staffs. USC is thought to be really, really good this season. They'll play those guys, I think, toward the end of October. I do think, and I don't know where it ranks, but I feel like that they have had more resources with which to acquire these players. We could call it recruiting. Maybe acquire is an equally important word in college athletics these days. I think their commitment with Jeff Grimes to running the ball, you know, they went pretty aggressively into the portal for offensive linemen, which I think that's important to do. What got lost last year, I think the defense was pretty good. You know, we all know the offensive struggles, but the defense, now they need to create more turnovers. We all know that. But I think they're better in the secondary potentially this season, a little more speed there. So, yeah, I think the schedule is the schedule, and that's an easy trap to fall into. They're not playing Oregon, Ohio State, Indiana, or Michigan. Okay, I get that. But USC's probably going to be pretty good. Penn State, have they ever not been talented? You know, and Matt Campbell is bringing over a lot of the good guys that he had from Iowa State. Hopefully he missed on the one who's up here, specifically with Abu. I think he's pretty good. I get it, because for the longest time, Wisconsin football, you would give them the benefit of the doubt. Mm-hmm. And I know now it's a little bit of a different mentality, but I do think they have more tools to work with. I think they recognized some of their own mistakes in the program. And I will forever believe that Luke Fickell's a really good football coach. It has not worked the way anybody would want it to this point. But the record shows that he's really good at what he does. And I think he and everybody over there can look in the mirror saying, okay, I like this. We need to change this, this, and this. And I think they've taken steps to do that.
Matt, we appreciate the generosity with your time. Mm-hmm. This has been the Jump Around on ESPN Madison and ESPN Milwaukee's YouTube streams.